And today we'll be starting or continuing, but basically it is starting Acts chapter 15. And we've reviewed for the last couple of weeks or so. But just to reiterate and just give a brief review and a setup for what has already taken place prior to Acts 15 is Paul and Barnabas had come off of their first missionary journey, got back to Antioch, taught there for what Luke states was a long time. And the scholars think that it was something like a year, year and a half. Then everything was going well. Peter even had come up from Jerusalem and was spending time here with Antioch and this mostly Gentile congregation. And everything was going well until there was a group that came from Jerusalem that claimed that they were sent from James, which James will deny in this chapter. And when they show up, Peter no longer will eat with the Gentiles, and neither will Barnabas. And so that brings out the ire of Paul, and he confronts Peter to his face, which, as we got all this outlined in Galatians chapter 2, which we covered a few weeks ago. But that is the background to what is the setup and what happens here with Acts 15, and it's the backstory. So Paul confronted Peter to his face here in Antioch. Then Paul receives a divine revelation from God that tells him to go down to Jerusalem and correct the error and the false teaching that they, and that was another thing I forgot. They came to Antioch that Luke is going to tell us here at the beginning what they were, their false teaching. It was telling that all of these Gentiles had to follow the law of Moses and be circumcised before they could become Christians. And so, by divine revelation, God has told Paul to go down to Jerusalem and straighten this congregation out of the false teachers that they'd had. And so that's where we are going to be picking up here in the first part of Acts 15. They travel down and go through this Phoenician region here and go through Samaria, which Luke mentions, then go to Jerusalem. And now, what Luke doesn't mention, but Paul did in Galatians 2, that before this meeting with the congregation at Jerusalem, Paul had another meeting with Peter, John, and James, the brother of Jesus, all three of those. And to their credit, they all got on board, even though they had not been previously. And so, whenever they had this meeting, they were all on the same page. And well, through many disputations, Luke says here in Acts 15, they do get through the meeting, and it is a success at least temporarily. That doesn't last some 5 or so years into the future, they have reverted back. And the comment that Kaufman makes in Acts 22, I believe, or maybe it's Acts 21, that it may have been humanly impossible for them to get out of Judaism completely since they've been so ingrained for 1500 years and then God finally forced them out. They didn't have a choice by causing the Roman Empire to come in and destroy Jerusalem and the temple. And so that forced them out. But until then, there's no evidence because here at the toward the end of Acts, they've reverted right back and holding to the old law. And so the implication is they did until 70 AD, but it was a hard stop from then on and forever. And so that was the end, that God was very patient with them, some 40 years from the time that Jesus was crucified. And but they and then finally his patience ran out, and that's when he had the temple destroyed. And then that was the hard break from the old covenant. And then the Jewish Christians never had any problem with that, about holding to the old law after that. And in fact, they weren't even in Jerusalem anymore. The historian that lived 200 or 300 AD reported that they did exactly as Jesus told them, and they got out of Jerusalem and they went to the mountains. And so then that they were out of Jerusalem anyway. So we will start with Acts 15. We covered verse 1 a few weeks ago, but we'll just start back over with verse 1 to get the context here, because this tells us what the false teaching was. And so Acts 15, verse 1, "And certain men came down from Judea and taught the brethren, unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved. Therefore, when Paul and Barnabas had no small dissension and dispute with them, they determined that Paul and Barnabas and certain others of them should go to Jerusalem to the apostles and elders about this question." And Kaufman said, "Paul would never have yielded to the Judaizing teachers. This is true because Paul had received a direct revelation from God covering the whole question. What is in view here is a very sharp clash between Paul's true position and the false position of the men who had come from Jerusalem." Luke used a characteristic understatement for emphasis when he wrote, "no small dissension and disputation." The indication is that Paul and Barnabas entered into a major discussion or debate in defense of the truth. One can only imagine the intensity shown by the fiery Apostle Paul as he defended the truth that he had received by direct revelation. Although it is stated here that the brethren appointed Paul and company to this task, Galatians 2 verse 2 plainly says that Paul went up by revelation. It is no doubt true that the congregation did appoint them, but that is not the reason Paul went. The Lord commanded him to go. So, but it was still important that the congregation at Antioch sent Paul and company to Jerusalem also. That was important because that was God's will. So, and that was a perfect demonstration that the congregation at Antioch's, that their desire was in complete harmony with God's will. And whereas, unfortunately, the other congregations that have all been mentioned were opposed to God's will. The congregation at Jerusalem, these Galatian congregations that Paul and Barnabas had spent three and a half years teaching here in Asia Minor, they had all conformed to this false teaching that these certain men that had come from Jerusalem had taught. They had bought completely into the false teaching. Everyone but Antioch had bought in. And so Antioch was the shining star in this passage and, you know, previous passages. And the congregation at Antioch is never referred to in a negative light, even as Kaufman had mentioned back in Acts chapter 11. That there was a historian that lived, and I've forgotten, I don't know if it's 1 or 200 AD, but he wrote that the congregation at Antioch was still strong 1, 2, and it might have even been 300 years later, but they were still a strong and solid congregation is what this historian reported and recorded and wrote. one of these certain other men that came down with Paul and Barnabas was Titus, who might have been a brother of Luke. And this would account for Titus's being nowhere mentioned in Luke's writings. This group almost certainly included the Apostle Peter also. It was prior to their arrival, however, that Paul and Peter clashed over the issue that so gravely threatened to disrupt Christian unity. It should be clearly understood that Paul and Barnabas were not going up to Jerusalem to receive a ruling on what they were supposed to believe on the circumcision question, nor should one understand that the Jerusalem congregation was the headquarters or the ruling authority over the remaining of the Lord's body. To do so is to miss the purpose of Paul's trip and to compound the error of these false teachers with yet another error. Paul and Barnabas were going to Jerusalem because apparently that was where the problem over circumcision began. These Judaizing teachers claimed to have received authority from James, and this was where James lived. The stubborn insistence of these Jewish agents made it clear that some of in the Jerusalem congregation intended to control the congregations everywhere, compelling them to conform to their own old covenant bias. Therefore, in order to root out the heresy, it was necessary that strong action be taken against the source of it in Jerusalem. In verse 3, so being sent on their way by the church, the congregation, there in Antioch, they passed through the Phoenician and Samaria regions, describing the conversions of the Gentiles. This was, of course, describing the conversions of the Gentiles on their first missionary journey and the great success that they had had. And they caused great joy to all the brethren. And Kaufman said about this verse, one can appreciate the congregation in Antioch for its efforts to support preachers who are willing to stand up in defense of the truth. These places were on their way, talking about Phoenicia and Samaria. So they could have taken another route here because they have a long ways to go. And the way the Jews would have gone, they would have gone on the east side of this Aronica River and then definitely on the east side of the Jordan coming down to Jerusalem and then crossed over going west into Jerusalem and bypassed these Gentile of Phoenicia region and definitely the hated Samaria region. They would have gone on the east side and completely avoided them, but Paul did not. He went right through the heart of Gentile rich areas, which Peter and Philip had evangelized over the past 10, maybe 15 years very heavily. And they had great success all up and down the Mediterranean Sea here. And Philip is the one that is mainly noted and for that. And he had even homesteaded in Caesarea here. And we will pick up with Philip in Acts 21. And that'll be the last time we ever hear about him. But he's... He's continually working, and so they've had great success here in this the Phoenicia and then Samarian regions. Paul could have traveled to Joppa, thus avoiding the Canaanite cities and the region of the mongrel Samaritans. The route Paul took to Jerusalem was in itself an affirmation of the principles for which he was contending. It is quite evident that the gospel had already made its mark on the hearts of many in these areas, with Philip leading the way since Acts chapter 8. It is also evident that those of the circumcision had not influenced the brethren in Phoenicia and Samaria with their error. So, very likely, I'm going to say that these Jews that came from Jerusalem never stopped to these Gentile areas, they just went straight to Antioch, since that was a hub and a very strong congregation, and obviously influential, because that was the jumping off point for Paul with his missionary journey. And so they probably never even stopped in here to what they would probably consider denigrate themselves, definitely with these Samaritans. But regardless, even if they had tried to spread their false teaching there, it did not stick with any in this area. And so they were thrilled, and they encouraged Paul and the company as they are going down to Jerusalem, and wish them well. And then Kaufman concludes with a statement here, and I'll read it first. The Christians in both of these areas were ready to rejoice at the success of the gospel among the Gentiles. There was a great reason for rejoicing. Salvation had come to the Gentiles. One can hope that the good Canaanite woman who would eat of the crumbs which fell from the master's table could now sit at the master's table and eat of the bread of life. And this is the well-known account of this woman, known as the Canaanite woman or the Phoenician woman, that lived here in Phoenicia when Jesus had gone into this region right before he fed the 4,000, as he came back into Capernaum, and which it was mostly these Gentiles that followed him back to Capernaum. But as Jesus went there, there was this woman whose daughter was, let me see here. She was either she was sick, and anyway, she asked Jesus to heal her, and we'll just read the account, and so we'll turn to that. It's Matthew chapter 15, and he has a little discourse with her, and she wisely has a rebuttal to his statement, and so she's rewarded that, and her daughter is healed. So we'll read this account, because this is right here in this area, and this will refresh our memories on what Kaufman is reflecting on about, hopefully, she was part of this group. So Matthew 15, it's verses 21 through 28. Then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region and cried out to him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." But he answered her not a word, and his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she cries out after us." So she was demon possessed. I'd failed to remember that. But he answered and said, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Then she came and worshipped him, saying, "Lord, help me." So Jesus is saying, "I'm here to only help the lost sheep of the Jews, the house of Israel, not the Gentiles." And but she stays after Jesus. And then verse 26, "But after he answered and said, 'It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs.' And she said, 'Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table.' Then Jesus answered and said to her, 'O woman, great is your faith, let it be to you as you desire.' And her daughter was healed from that very hour." So Jesus at that moment cast the demon out of her child. And so that is the reason that Kaufman wrote this statement, that one can hope that the good Canaanite woman who would eat of the crumbs which fell from the master's table could now sit at the master's table and eat of the bread of life, referring to hopefully she has now become a Christian, which this is some 20 years later. We're 50 AD, so this is 20 years plus 22 years after this time frame. So hopefully she has become a Christian, and hopefully she was in this group that was able to welcome and encourage Paul and his company. Well, we will end there, and Lord willing, we will pick up with verse 4 next week.